You're listening to Mom Talk, the online community radio show connecting moms across Canada and around the world. Join Helen, Kara, and Tracy, the parenting team from CanadianParents.com, as they talk all things mom. Mom Talk, a podcast for moms, by moms, because we're all in this together. Hi, this is Tracy, your host today for Work at Home Moms Talk. This is a special podcast series interviewing real Canadian moms who figured out how to earn an income while staying at home. Each mom has their own unique story to tell, and today we're interviewing award-winning author and writer Anne Douglas from Peterborough, Ontario. Anne has written 28 books, including the books in the best-selling The Mother of All book series published by Wiley Canada. Anne is a well-known parenting blogger, a columnist, and a regular contributor to a number of pregnancy and parenting magazines. She's a regular guest on TV and radio and is frequently quoted in Canadian and U.S. print and online media. She speaks at health, parenting, work life, and writing conferences on topics ranging from becoming a parent to thriving as a writer to nurturing your creativity. She has developed and taught writing courses and workshops for both Fleming College and Trent University. Anne is a member of the National Advisory Board for Investing Kids and serves on the board of directors for the Peterborough YWCA. She's a former president of the Professional Writers Association of Canada and has mentored a number of its members. Let's chat with Anne and get to know how a work-at-home mom can accomplish all this while raising her beautiful family. Welcome, Anne.
It's great to be with you, Tracy.
Thank you. Tell me your story.
Well, I started working from home back when I was a new mom. Before that, I had been working part-time or full-time outside the house, depending on, you know, where I was working at the time. But once I had my first child, I was in a new community. And first of all, it was a community where it was hard to get work in the first place. And I had a hard time letting go. I decided that because I wasn't finding work directly in my field, I might as well try freelancing from home. So that's what I did. And I would, first of all, do some work during, you know, nap time, or try to do it during nap time when my baby would nap. Mm-hmm. And I did some work in the evenings. And other times I would get a contract where I'd have to go out of the home, and then I would hire a child care provider. And I have to tell you, that was around the time when Oprah was showing these clips about, you know, really awful babysitters from hell. And, I probably just by sheer luck tuned into that episode and saw all this scary, scary stuff. And I was petrified about leaving my daughter with somebody. But I got past that. And that was sort of crossing that first barrier of working from home, but taking her out to child care.
First of all, when you talk about the nature of your work, what type of work were you looking for in the onset?
At the very beginning, this was going back to 1988, because my oldest is now 21, and the boys are 19, almost 18, and 11. So at that point, I knew I wanted to become a writer. So, you know, I'm talking about trying to get my first articles into print, mm-hmm. and then now I have 28 books in print. So, you know, it's at the other end of the journey. But at that point, I knew I needed peace and quiet in order to be able to concentrate on my writing. By the time I had the fourth one, I was actually breastfeeding and writing books. But at the first point, I had this sense that it would be easier to do it without a baby at the breast while I was typing. But, you know, you just evolve as a mom. You evolve as a writer. The whole thing changes as you go. And I also knew I couldn't afford too much childcare because some of those early writing contracts were not terribly lucrative, mm-hmm. let's just say. Mm-hmm. And so it was definitely juggling. And the thing about the writing business is you don't know very far in advance that you're getting an assignment. Sometimes you get a call and it's like, we'd love to give you this assignment. You're so happy and excited. And it's like, the thing is, it's due 3 days from now. And of course, it requires 12 hours of work. And you're going, oh, I'm so happy. No problem. I can do it. And then you hang up and you go, oh, no. What am I going to do?
What did I get myself into?
Yes, exactly. So you're having these little tiny freakouts. And of course, you have to sort of put on the facade of calmness on the home front. Oh, no, don't worry, honey. It's all under control. And, you know, going to be able to do it. And so, you know, that's when you go into the bathroom and you sort of go, ah, Or you call your writer friends and you do that little silent scream thing. Now we can all, you know, type the scream thing.
Yeah.
And it's much more therapeutic. And but you do it because you want to be working in that field. I mean, if you want to be a writer, you have no choice. It calls you and you respond, because otherwise you just hear the voices in your head that say, write, write, write. And then, you know, it's, people start to wonder why you're distracted all the time.
Yes. And what was your setup back then?
It was whatever space I could find. It was like, you know, I think we had a raised bungalow, and I never really had an office. So it was just like moving pile of paper with a computer that was, I think.
Gigantic.
A huge monster computer. And I think it was, maybe at that point we still had a guest bedroom, because I think we had the second baby right before we moved. So, you know, isn't it funny how you just have like vague pictures of sort of what a room was like? And I could never really leave the baby to go and do any writing while she was awake, because the computer was in the basement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you're going to have a baby crawling around a basement while you write. Well,
yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be an ideal situation, we'll say.
No.
Even then I knew about childproofing, eh? Mm-hmm. So.
What can you tell us about your setup now?
Now I have sort of two different arrangements depending on the day of the week. So on Mondays and Fridays, I generally still work from home, which means, funnily enough, I don't have a desk at home. I guess some things come full circle. So I tend to work with my laptop on my lap. Mm-hmm. That's what they're designed for, right? And I do have a very good childbearing lap at this point. So I just work wherever I am. So often the couch, or else sometimes in the nice weather, I'll go and sit on the porch, because my internet connection doesn't work as well there, so I don't have as many distractions. Or I'll sometimes, you know, just move to the kitchen table and keep the kids company, depending on the kind of work I'm doing. The teenagers, of course, you know, they come and go a lot, and sometimes one of them's away at college during the school year. Mm-hmm. But I don't really have sort of a desk set up per se, because the desk has now become the bill-paying center at home and so on. On the other days of the week, we decided a few years ago, when it was getting a little crazy with very loud, happy, boisterous teenagers, that the business and three teenagers and a young boy, it was just becoming a bit too insane to try and combine them in the same 1,800-square-foot house. Mm-hmm. So I kicked the business out of the house. I decided something had to give, and it would be much less traumatic if the business hit the road. So it lives across town in a very tiny bungalow, 700-square-foot bungalow, if you can imagine. All it looks like is a house of books. There are rooms and rooms of books, research materials on parenting and writing and all kinds of things, pregnancy galore. You
know, it sounds yummy.
It is really neat. I collect vintage pregnancy books, vintage parenting books, vintage marriage advice books. So I have a mix of old and new.
I've noticed your Etsy.
Yes, my Etsy stuff. Yes,
yeah,
I have a little wee Etsy vintage shop, because sometimes what I do is I'll say, oh my gosh, there's three copies of this book. Well, of course I must buy them all,
because yeah,
they're so adorable. And then I'll think I'm going to give them away as a gift, and then I'll think, well, I really should probably share these with the world. So then I sell off the extra copies or whatever. It's quite fun. So yeah, I have this house of a million books, and just love having the space to write and create in peace.
Right.
Because the thing with having a separate space at this stage in my life is that I can leave my materials where they are, and I don't have to worry about a teenager accidentally writing somebody's phone number on a contract.
Yeah.
Or something, because when they're on the phone, they get very distracted, and they'll just say, oh wait, what's your phone number? And they'll write it across the most crucial piece of paper if they happen to sit down at my work desk. And it just gets to be a little awkward, embarrassing, and so on. So I really like the fact that this can be sort of my work hub. And then on the days when I'm at home, those days I can sort of juggle doing a bit of laundry, doing like the more mundane, boring things, like if I have to sort through spam in my email. Spam is the bane of my existence. Just, I get so much of it, and you can do so much with filters, but you still have to go into the gray zone where the filters don't really know if somebody who says, hi, how are you, is really a spammer, or just somebody in your family who doesn't know that's not the best subject line to use to reach you.
Spam can really eat up your time.
It can.
Yeah.
So let's tell people, please don't grow up to be spammers, and don't let your children grow up to be spammers.
Exactly. Now, did you find, Anne, that in the early days, because you were working from home, did you have a difficult time having people take you seriously?
I did at times. Like, I have this one friend from public school onwards who has always had a knack for calling at the worst possible time. I think she has, like, radar. You know how we say our kids have radar for, like, interrupting sex? Mm-hmm. She has the radar for interrupting my work at the most critical time. And I've had to get caller ID. I pay for caller ID to identify this person so that I won't pick up the call when I'm writing. Right. And it cost me a couple of dollars a month to have her as a friend, but she's a really good friend otherwise. So I just figure it's the price of our friendship, and I keep the service going. But otherwise, she'll say, I just need to tell you one thing. Well, the one thing takes 15 minutes. And then she'll remember another thing.
Sounds like my mother.
Well, you know, and it's not that I don't love to talk to her, but I just don't love to talk to her when I then lose my train of thought and can't get back to finishing the article or whatever it is I'm working on that day.
Exactly.
So it can be a disruption. And people who want to sell you stuff during the day, who knew there were so many people canvassing door to door? And so sometimes I do like this major cop-out, and I'll go to the door and I'll say, my husband makes all decisions about that. I don't care what it is.
Good
and
one.
But you know what? It's so anti-feminist, and I really am a very strong, empowered
yes,
woman.
Are.
And it's like for me to stand there and say, my husband makes all decisions about the blah, 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 but it's just my standard line.
Yeah.
And when it's a telemarketer, I say, oh, we recently had that done or something. And then I look down at my bare floors and I think, oh, I've just basically lied because we don't really have any carpets. But, yeah. But sometimes I just don't want to explain to them in 10,000 words about how we don't really have carpets. And because then I'd be talked into getting carpets just so they could clean them, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not going there. It's just too time-consuming.
And it's just, you know, just be polite. And whatever you say it, and you get on with your day.
Yes, exactly. I'm never mean to people because I figure, you know, they're just trying to make a living. And
and that could be my son or daughter someday.
It could be. It may very well be any day now. I have three kids who work in the food services industry, and I hear horror stories about how they're treated by Jane and Joe Public. So please be nice to people in the food service industry.
Okay. We've got to get that out loud and clear.
We do.
Do you feel as though you're sacrificing anything to stay at home, or did you used to feel that way?
Well, I know that if I was really on the career path or whatever you want to call it, and it was totally important to me to become a publishing executive or something like that, that I could have had a more glamorous or efficient or whatever career by just going full bore at it and working downtown Toronto in some publishing thing. Mm-hmm. But I think I would have failed miserably at that because I would have been stressed to the max. Mm-hmm. I am much better being self-employed. I don't think I have the personality to be a full-time employee.
No. I don't either.
I don't like jobs where the routine repeats itself repeatedly. I guess that's what routines are all about. Mm-hmm. For example, I would be a terrible accountant because having done that kind of function in one job, it's like, what do you mean it's month end again and we have to print off the same reports? I've done that before.
Yeah.
I like the variety of jobs and projects that evolve. And I really hate mean office politics and things like that. They drive me around the bend. By working independently and just, you know, working with different teams of people, it's sort of the best of both worlds where I get to have colleagues and work with fabulous people, but I don't have to worry about if
somebody... See them every day.
Yeah, and if somebody uses somebody else's mug and it causes a big...
And if they they don't like you, it doesn't matter. You won't be seeing them again.
And maybe they talk amongst themselves about my strange hair and, you know, my flyaway roots and how I really need to use more moisturizer, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the best thing. Sometimes I'm a little oblivious to this stuff, and every once in a while, you know, I'll hear some nasty little piece of gossip about me, as we all do, and I'll think, holy cow, I can't believe that. I'm shocked because I had no idea.
Yeah.
But so sometimes it's good to be a little socially naive about these things because you honestly don't really think about that stuff until you get blindsided. Then it's a bit brutal because you just really had no idea it was coming.
Yeah.
But that's one of the advantages, I think, of running your own business. It really does cut to the chase. My husband sometimes telecommutes. Not allowed to do it all the time because he works for one of those sort of government-type organizations, and they're not totally enlightened, let's say. And he says that he can get done in 1 to 2 hours at home what it takes him an entire 8-hour day to do at work.
Oh, I believe it.
And that's even with me asking for technical support and stuff.
Yeah, I believe it.
You see, unlike you, I get to places where I get really stuck. I can do a lot of things technically, but like right now, my computer has lost the printer. I feel like taking it to the other room and holding the laptop up and saying, see,
it's right here.
What is your problem? But obviously some driver has fallen off something.
Yeah.
And so I have to figure out a way.
Reinstall the driver.
Yes. But I find that really annoying. I think it should stay installed.
Oh, I agree with you. So you need your little techie person. You need someone that you can just say this.
I'm going to try it myself to see if I can do the strong, independent woman thing.
Okay.
I always like to play from that position. But if it doesn't work, then I will have to humbly say, if you have a moment, could you please do this?
Yeah.
And hope I get an appropriate response, not like, oh, you couldn't fix it yourself, in which case I will be in a grumpy mood. I don't like having to ask in the first place.
I know.
No, it's very annoying.
But, you know, there are certain technical things that I just refuse to get involved in. I know this sounds really weird, but I hardly know how to manipulate all the beamers on our big screen TV downstairs. I hardly know how to do it. There's all these wires, and there's all this stuff going on, and I refuse to get involved in it.
We have had two supposedly idiot-proof remote controls that it keeps asking you questions like, is it working now? Is it working now?
Oh.
I figured out a way to make the idiot-proof remote control not respond properly because somehow I answered yes or no incorrectly to one of the questions. But they are not intuitive. Don't let anyone tell you they are, because they're not.
No. And you just have to draw the line somewhere.
Yes.
You just draw the line in the sand. Don't ask me.
Yeah. Well, I figure I have a lot of expertise and knowledge in a lot of different domains, and I'm not learning how to fix lawnmowers or to do a lot of different things, because otherwise I'll have to waste hours not learning about things that I love.
Yeah.
So that's what I figure. That's my rationale anyways.
I like that theory. I love it. It sounds like your family really does support what you do.
They very much do. And my husband is very hands-on in picking up the slack with the kids if I have to meet a deadline for something. Or like next week, there's about 1 or 2 weeks of the year where I go away for a stretch of days.
Mm-hmm.
And next week I'm going to a writer's conference for 5 days. And I am just so looking forward to it. It's a way to recharge my batteries and my creativity. He's going to have to take a couple of days off work just to make sure that the little guy gets to school and back and so on. And he does so happily, of course, when he wants to go and see some auto race thing that he really loves. I, again, do so with love in my heart and everything so that he can do something that really matters to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the give and take of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are very, very funny. My youngest, I have to tell you, is almost sickening at times because he'll always ask if he can give my books as teacher presents.
Oh, nice.
When he was younger, I had to point out that, you know, not everybody needed a pregnancy book or things like that.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, you can't just sort of foist these things on people who may
but
not.
He's proud of his mom.
He's very proud and he's adorable. And sometimes we'd be going for a walk and he would adopt people with strollers and start trying to sell them my books and things. And
I'd
have to put the brakes on him a bit. We didn't know until much later on that he has Asperger's syndrome, and so this could maybe explain a little bit of the enthusiasm and so on, but he is just adorable. In fact, there was one time we were in a grocery store. There was this one time I was on a Cheerios box. And
I remember that.
Yeah, and he was pulling all the Cheerios boxes off the shelf and going, nope, nope, nope. Yep. Nope. 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 Because other people were on some of the boxes at the same time, and he was just getting all the ones with me. And I'm sure people were going, why are some of the Cheerios boxes worthy and some of them are unworthy?
Yeah.
He just is so sweet and so passionate about what I do. And what I love is he has picked up the fact that if you feel strongly about things in this world, you should use your voice. Because apparently one day there was a joke on the CBC comedy show that he didn't think was particularly funny. He took offense to it and he decided to write to them himself.
Good
and
for him.
Yeah, and just say so. And of course, he showed me the joke and I didn't really find it offensive. But I said to him, I think it's great that you decided to speak up and use your voice. And what was really great is that the CBC people wrote him a very lovely letter back and said, thank you so much for drawing our attention to this, and we'll be very careful not to offend people about this in future and stuff. And they treated him with total respect. Obviously, they knew he was a child just because of his writing level and so on. Mm-hmm. And I just thought some shows or whatever wouldn't take the time to respond to a viewer, but they did. And just another reason why the CBC rocks.
I know. I love the CBC. My kids were brought up on it. It took me through motherhood and postnatal depression and everything.
I know.
It helped shape the woman I am today. It really did.
I feel the same way. It's just an amazing Canadian resource.
It is. It is. Now, Anne, do you ever have a problem with motivation? I mean, I think we all have a little bit of problems, just sometimes.
I've had it in both directions. Sometimes I would spend too much time working because my office was in the home, and I'd think, okay, well, I'm really, really worried about this, so maybe if I just get it finished, it won't be on my mind anymore. Mm-hmm. And then it would be I'd stay up till 2 in the morning to try and finish something and then get up with the kids at 6:30 or 7. And you can't do that for too long before you start to get really, really sort of fried. So that would be one side of the coin. And then the other side of the coin is when you're a writer and you're having a hard time getting started on something, there's this very well-known phenomenon where you suddenly get this desire to clean your office, organize your drawers.
I have that.
And so if you find yourself cleaning obsessively, you know, oh my gosh, this means I'm not ready to write a story. So then you have to say to yourself, obviously I haven't done enough research, or I've got new editor syndrome, where you're afraid of the new editor you've never worked with before, because of course they're going to discover you're the least talented writer in the world, and you know, they're going to hate your guts, and they're going to reject your story, and your life will be over, you'll be publicly mocked in the streets, and it's just going to come all around and haunt you. These are the things that go through a person's head when they are driven to clean their office floor.
That is hilarious. So what do you do? What do you do when?
Well, you clean for a little while, and then you say, you know what, if I continue to alphabeticalize all the books in my office, they will be alphabeticalized, but I will be 5 months past my deadline, and then things will be very bad. So I must pull away and just get down to work. And sometimes if you email the editor and say, I'm really stuck because I don't quite understand if what you want is this or that, then you can get a little more clarification about the assignment, or just a little encouraging note or something that just helps you to get started. Or you can hopefully tap into all your writer buddies. Some writers are afraid of other writers, and some of them very wisely realize that other writers are your best support team in the world.
Yeah, we need each other.
Oh, for sure, because nobody else understands those strange little ideas that go on in your head.
And you're very well connected with other writers.
Oh, I love other writers.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's wonderful. That's such a good outlook to have.
It is. Well, you know, I mean, when I think about all the highs and lows in my own writing journey and stuff, and times when I've had struggles, they are the people who keep you sane. I mean, one of my most recent books I dedicated to the Writer Mamas, who are a group of writers on a list that I belong to, and I said something about how they kept me sane. Oh, actually, I have the book here. I'll read it to you. This is from my book, Sleep Solutions for Your Baby, Toddler, and Preschooler, and the dedication says, to the Writer Mamas, for being there for me when I found myself up in the night tending to a sleep book that wouldn't go to bed, and for sharing my passion for making a difference in the lives of other mothers.
Oh, nice.
But they really did keep me sane, because that was a very hard book to write, because there was so much technical information and I had to get it exactly right in order to convey the safety information and yet not get people completely freaked out and panicked, and balance off what we know about the anthropology of sleep with the science of sleep, and still bring in mothers' voices and be up to date. And it was just the most difficult book I've ever written.
Wow.
So that book just about drove me around the bend.
And you were so glad to put that to bed.
I was very happy to tuck that little one in, I have to tell you. Some books are more difficult than others, and just like when I wrote my book, Trying Again, which was about trying to become pregnant and have a baby after miscarriage, stillbirth, or infant death, that was very tough, because having been through some of those experiences myself, miscarriage and stillbirth, it was when I was writing the book that I I was relating so strongly with the stories that sometimes I would sit there at my keyboard and I would cry, just feeling so sad for the parents and that kind of thing. And even recently I was at the Baby Time show and I had this lovely, lovely mother come up and she told me how much that book had meant to her in helping her through her grief journey. And after she left, I just stood there in the booth and I started to cry and just thought, to have the privilege of being able to help somebody in some way through your writing, it really is a huge, huge privilege. And I never lose sight of that. I just,
isn't that wonderful?
I'm always looking for other ways. And I ask myself all the time when I'm thinking about what should my next projects be, even though I joke that, oh, yes, I'm going to write The Fluffy Guide to Spas or something like that. I'm not taking any more life experience projects on. Thank you very much. You know, but I know that I always look really deeply inside and I think, what books can I write that would really make a difference? Because that's why I've been given some of these challenging experiences in life, because I can write about them, I can try to help people through my writing, and I can also through that, you know, help myself, because I can share my experiences and know that I wasn't given those experiences just for the heck of it.
No,
I was given them because I could process them, reach out to others, and do something positive with them, right?
Oh, that's beautiful.
You're coming full circle.
Yes,
and it does help to sort of integrate them into your life. And so having worked through a lot of grief and depression and struggles about boundaries and bullying and all kinds of interesting things in recent years, I've been having that information percolate in my head, and now I'm sorting out what to do with those experiences. In what way will I write about them, and how will I hopefully find a way to help other people?
And, you know, you're so talented with your writing. Like, it's almost, I don't like to use the word effortless, but it just flows out of you.
When it's in the right, when I'm in the right state of mind, it does.
Yeah.
And it's getting to there. It's getting to that peaceful place and relaxing and just saying it doesn't have to be
perfect
or even good enough. I just have to get something down on paper. And sometimes I have to trick myself and say, okay, I'm not really writing. I'm writing in point form. Okay, well, I've got a paragraph that sounds okay. So I'll leave that there and I'll just write this little chunk. And then I'll notice I've got 3/4 of something done. And then I'll go back and say, well, since I have 3/4 of it done, I might as well just flesh it out a bit more. Because if I get really anxious about something, then it's impossible to write. It's just like a horrible thing. And I think that's where it can be a struggle. But when writing is going well and you just think about the reader who might benefit from this and how you want to help people and how you want to surprise and delight people, then it's just like you're creating a gift for a friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a neat way of thinking about it, creating a gift for a friend. The word spa did come up, and I know that spa is not necessarily part, doesn't necessarily have to be any part of taking care of yourself, but to everything you've been through and your career right now, are you taking care of yourself? Are you getting enough sleep, or what do you do?
I have learned I have to get enough sleep, and that's not to say there isn't the odd night I stay up too late, but I have learned that if I don't get about 8 hours sleep, then I start to become depressed. It's just one of those things, and it bugs me because the go-goer in me knows that, oh, wouldn't it be great to be able to get 6 hours sleep or whatever, but it just, I start to become depressed. I stopped having caffeine, which some people are going to go, oh, you have the imposter Ann Douglas on your podcast. This is not the real Ann Douglas. Because caffeine used to be my number one food group. But I've now switched to decaf. And I discovered I don't actually need caffeine to have a lot of energy, believe it or not. I actually am a high energy person without caffeine.
Oh, that's cool.
But it allows me to sleep better.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing I learned.
Even if you stop drinking caffeine in the morning, your
ever
sleep at night is better.
Ever. I don't ever have caffeine anymore. Nothing. In nothing.
Wow.
And that was a major shift. And I take time to relax, like, a lot. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are some days that I just don't do any work. It's just like a day off to just think and reflect and read things I'm interested in. I've become a lot more outspoken. I've learned how to set boundaries. I've learned how to advocate for myself and for others and things I really believe in. So that has been a really powerful shift. And we have this wonderful cottage that used to be owned by mice, but they have sublet it to us, so we are able to enjoy a really rustic Canadian cottage. And we opened up at the second weekend in May, and it won't be shut until as soon as, I guess it'll be like late October. We once pushed being there in November, and we had to spend $200 on a towing bill to get out, so you can't do that too much.
No.
But it's just being near water. I grew up at a family cottage on a small lake in the Muskokas and stuff, and when you have that connection to water and nature, it's just, that is what really calms and soothes me.
Yeah.
And doing arts and crafts, it sounds so corny, but I just, I'm not very artistic, but I love creating things, so I do that. I do tons and tons of photography. And just spending time with my youngest son, he's a very soulful person and likes to talk a lot, so I do that. My husband and I don't get to spend as much time together as we'd like because he's back on shift a lot these days, so that's a bit of a challenge. When we're at the cottage, there is no TV. I mean, you can't even get the all static channel there.
Right.
So we watch movies. We bring up, you know, seasons of TV that we really like. And I love independent films and documentaries. So we watch a lot of those. And that's our very exciting lifestyle. Oh, yeah, and I do a lot of volunteer work. I'm on the board of directors for our local YWCA, which is raising tons of money for a women's shelter.
Right.
I'm on the advisory board of Invest in Kids for their new parent partnership program. And I tend to get involved in sort of short-term things where I can contribute ideas to something or whatever. And that really energizes me because if something gets bogged down with a lot of paperwork or
day-to-day,
yeah, that kind of stuff, I find it kind of a drag, but I love being, you know, a spark of ideas or something like that.
You've got it all figured out.
I'm still working on being more physically active, trying to lose some of the weight I'm carrying and doing that, but in healthy ways that seem to be working for me. And I think the most important thing is I have amazing, amazing friends, sisters.
You do, you know, have lovely sisters. Yeah.
Yes, and wonderful friends like you, Tracy. When you connect with really good people and you maintain those connections, like I've known you since 1995.
Yeah.
That is a long time.
It is.
And look at the history that goes there and having raised families and all that kind of stuff. Like, that is a long time. And we're both relationship people. We build and maintain relationships. And that's a really amazing thing because I know any time that I need to reach out to talk to somebody who has older kids than me, who's lived through the next stage, I can reach up to you and say, help.
Yeah.
What do I do about this? It's great to know you're there.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful. In closing, Anne, I'm wondering, do you have any advice for other work-at-home moms? You know, you've got so much wisdom, and we've covered a lot of topics today. But do you have any little pieces of wisdom to shoot out to moms that may be looking to start a business from home?
I think the big two would be boundaries and guilt. With the boundaries piece, to really be clear about whether you're in family mode or whether you're in work mode. Be clear for yourself so that that way you're not trying to do two things at once. I have tried to cook with the laptop near the stove. I have not melted the laptop, but I have burned the things on the stove because I get too immersed in my work. So I don't recommend that. And you shortchange something. So if you're trying to talk to clients on the phone and your toddler's having a fit in the background, you feel compromised in both directions. It really doesn't work. So if you're working and you have young kids, as I did for many years, you really need to have childcare for the hours that you're trying to do the juggling thing, right?
Right.
So that's one thing. And the guilt thing, you're never going to have everything perfectly together. There's always a to-do list in both of your lives, in your mother life, in your business life. And so it's kind of like triage when you get to the hospital and they say, okay, well, this guy's bleeding profusely and this guy's having a heart attack and this person has a sprained baby finger. So the Mr. Sprained Baby Finger, we realize it's a big drama thing for you, but you can sit there for a few minutes and we'll deal with these people who really need attention.
Yeah.
You have to do that with your business life and your home life. And you know what? I don't think I've ever dusted the top of my baseboard. Somebody on some show suggested recently that's something we should be very upset and concerned about. So someday I will remember to hand the 11-year-old the Swiffer or something and say, go do your magic. And he likes that kind of thing. But until that happens, I guess I will have to live with the horror of dusty baseboards.
Yeah.
You can see it's causing me great angst. But, but you just have to do that, right? And
exactly.
I have a whole rack of things on my desk here. It's a whole, like, probably 30 folders. I don't even know what's in them. So obviously they are not so urgent. I think there's like story ideas to pitch and marketing ideas and all kinds of things. Well, obviously, if I didn't do anything with these things in the last year, probably nothing there really matters that much.
Yeah.
So I think what I might do is just flip through, pull out anything that's confidential and recycle the rest.
Good. And then you'll feel so much better.
Yes, and then I'll have another 2 square feet of desk space to put other more interesting things on.
Yeah. Next time you get writer's block, you can go through some of that stuff.
True. Then I might have some good ideas in there. Maybe I'll put them in the basement, and then I can go and get them if I need them.
Yeah, I have numerous stacks all over the place, so...
Well, you know, maybe
they kinda
we should.
They kind of make me feel comfy. They kind of make me feel cozy.
Yes, like you're never going to run out of ideas. On that one day, it's like when people worry about hitting the last page of the internet. When you hit the last idea, then all will be saved.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Anne. It's been a pleasure speaking to you today.
And likewise, Tracy.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You can catch up with Anne online at annedouglas.typepad.com/blogs.